Welcome to the Real Estate Power Play Podcast, your launch pad for skyrocketing success in real estate investing. I'm your host, Gabe Rodarte, alongside Mark Monroe. We're ready to bring you transformative stories, groundbreaking strategies, and the insider secrets of real estate giants. Get ready to accelerate your investment journey and become a true power player in the world of real estate. Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to the Real Estate Power Play Podcast, brought to you by myself, Gabe Rodarte, and my buddy Mark Monroe. Today is going to be an awesome day. We have the man, Luke Wong, a really good friend of mine, and I can't wait for him to share a story about how he got into doing storage facilities and then what he's doing now, and then really expanding on how other people could get involved with storage facilities and connect and see how to do the lending side of it. What are the things that we need to know to get involved with storage facilities and the pros and cons and stuff that we need to look at. So today is going to be an awesome show. Welcome and let's get rolling. All right. So Luke, what's happening, bro?
What's going on, Gabe? Good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. You been good?
Awesome, brother. You?
I've been good, man. I just been watching your growth and what you've been doing in the storage space. Figured we'd get you on and share. I think you were on this podcast maybe like 2 years ago when we first started this podcast, and this how much you've grown and the facilities you've acquired since then. So we all really want to dig into those things. So just to let everyone know who don't know who you are, why don't you share a little bit of your background real quick, you know, 1-2 minutes of what's the story?
Sure. Absolutely. So Luke Wong, I live in Colorado Springs now. So started my real estate career in Houston when I moved there in 2001. Worked with a relative doing land acquisitions for land development. He does subdivisions all around Houston for single family homes. So I did that for about 10 years. And then I went on to do single family renovations and rehabbing. Did that for, I would say almost about 4 or 5 years. And then I was unfortunate. I got sick, was in the hospital for a little while. And then when I came back to, so I had to take about a year off. When I came back to the market, things had changed. The renovations weren't selling as quickly as before. So this is around 2015, 16, when I guess the oil prices took a dip. And then, you know, we had it good for so long. You put a house on the market within a couple of days, a week, max 2 weeks, this thing is getting outbidded and you're getting over asking prices and things are selling. But when I got back out of the hospital and got back into things, the market had changed. It wasn't as hot. And also it had the area that I did it in had flooded back to back. I think it was like a tax day flood, Memorial Day flood. So that whole area got got hit pretty hard. So then I started wholesaling, just kind of figure out where the market was going, what's happening. Partnered up and we grew a little wholesaling operation, about 10 people, and did some wholesaling of single family homes in Houston and San Antonio. Then I decided I wanted to go ahead and do something different, which was commercial real estate. I got into commercial passively 2018 by investing passively into three different deals. One was a shopping center in Houston. Another one was a storage facility in Conroe. And then the third one was a apartment complex in Dallas. And that kind of gave me a taste of the commercial assets, the different classes, and the different operators. So there were three different operators, three different people, three different asset classes. And then I wanted to figure out which one really, you know, gelled with me, and it was self-storage.
Awesome.
I just fit my personality the best. And then I just used the wholesaling techniques that I've learned and started mailing letters to self-storage owners. Of course, I got some education. Scott Myers Group, I did his mastermind and his academy. So that was very helpful. But I started sending letters out and I got a few back, and the one that stuck was a lady in Orange. Got back to me. The facility was all climate controlled, about 13,500 square feet. I went to go see it. I had a good rapport with her. We closed about 6 months later, so it, you know, it took a little bit. It's not as speedy as houses. You know, took a little bit of getting to know her, getting to know me. But anyway, she owner financed the deal. She understood owner finance.
Nice.
She enjoyed owner finance also from her end. She used to do apartments, and she likes the income that you could get rather than sticking the cash in the bank.
Right.
She owner financed it. I believe it was like 70 or 75%, and then I put down 20, 25%. And that was the start.
Wow.
In 2020, so I hired a consultant to help me get off the ground because I knew nothing about running a facility. She spent about a week with me in there. And from there, I just kept on learning and learning and learning. And then ran into another partner, Dave. Now he's a good friend of mine and partner and a lot of other deals. And we were able to take down another facility in Magnolia that was like six times as big in 2021. And then 2022, we took down another three facilities in Tyler, Texas, which is, again, everything's within three and a half hours from Houston driving, so I could go there and visit when I wanted to and, you know, do what needs to be done and learn and, you know, get my boots on the ground and my help that I needed. So that's been the ride so far. And recently moved to Colorado Springs about 6 months ago. And for health reasons, it's just a lot better for us out here. And now I'm going to be looking at acquiring some facilities out here. So still look at facilities in Houston, Dallas area, and then now Colorado Springs, and within 3 hour drive from Colorado Springs.
Awesome. Dude, that's an awesome story. And it's cool to see it, like, just this how you scheduled up and just got bigger and bigger, and not even bigger in far as scale of like the size of the facilities, but just as the fact of like the momentum that starts tumbling forward. Mm-hmm. And you also have a show, right? You have a storage facility clubhouse, or?
Yeah, so it's a self-storage clubhouse show. The clubhouse app that's on your phone, it's audio only. It's like a live podcast that you can ask questions, but it's audio, so you can listen to in your car and so forth. And we do that every Tuesday, 9 a.m. Central.
Got it.
Every week.
Got it. So let's jump in. So you have these facilities. You came from all types of real estate, and this is like your niche. This is something that you know, just really, I don't know if I'd say fall in love with, but you really enjoy it. And now you have different groups of friends, networking, all the stuff that you've done. What is something for someone who's newer, who's going, man, I've always wanted to own a storage facility. I really like them. I pass them up all over the place. What is something that you get asked a lot from other people going, okay, how do I get going? And then what is your response? Like, what is something that you're helping people get started into storage space?
Well, yeah. So I get quite a few calls here and there, are emails and people asking for, I guess, my advice or help. And I you know, tell them I'm still learning, but I'll give you know, as much help as I can. And so a lot of people ask how to get started, or they say, I have this deal. What do you think? And again, this is just my opinion and guess how we like to operate. First of all, I would look for something local in your area that you can go drive and touch and you know, go learn. Because if it's in another state, it's going to be hard to go help and run it and learn it. And I think you've got to put yourself really deep in to the business to really understand it and really make it as efficient as possible.
Right.
We don't syndicate any deals. It's all just partnerships. And so one, kind of know your area of where you want to stay. Mine is like 2-3 hours of where I'm living. And then, you know, get a list, whether from some data providers or just go on Google and look at the different facilities and start writing down their information and looking up their tax information of who the owner is. And you can use like LandGlide. It's another app that can help find you.
Nice.
who the owner is. But once you get that mailing list, mail the list out, tell them who you are, a little bit about yourself and what you want to do, and just be genuine, because I think they can read through that. And then also, don't think you have to go through the same path that I did, where you start with the houses. Because if I could do it again, I would probably just switch straight into self-storage. But I know a lot of people, including myself, feel that you kind of need a stair step, and just for comfort level. But in all honesty, you don't, because it's just the same thing, just different assets, bigger numbers. And if you get a good owner finance deal and they understand it, and then you can find, either you have the money yourself, or you find one or two partners that will either lend you and be a lender on there, or they can be, you know, a small ownership also, that can get you started. Because dealing with the banks, especially in this climate of the economy we're in right now, with the rates, it's a little bit tough. So I would say, one, stay in your local market. Two, don't think you have to, that it's not possible that you have to start with houses first. And then three, just really mail out to the sellers and get to know them. And another thing is, it's not as fast as houses. So just remember that. You have to be a little patient. You have to sometimes plant the seed. Go around to facilities and even talk with them. Because some of them are, I guess half of them will be owners, and the other half will be managers, but they'll both share a lot of stuff. Even you'll be surprised what the employees will share. But if and when they get ready to sell, they might, if you're visiting, you know, every so often, they'll remember you, and they might want to sell to the big guys like Public Storage, and want to rather have the legacy go on with somebody, you know, individual or a family.
Right.
But also, I mean, of course, get education and just learn as much as you can, whether it be going to the state association, joining that, talking to other people, going to the clubhouse show, even the YouTube videos, or joining masterminds. But also understand there's no replacement for actually just doing it, because I remember my first house when I flipped it. It's like, it's uncomfortable, but once you do it, you're like, okay.
That's right.
Now it's done.
Right.
So just do it.
Well, one of the things that you were mentioning is just the fact of you marketing and how you do marketing to these facilities. And, you know, you're sending letters, you're contacting them, you're pulling lists, you're swinging by the front door, you're knocking on it, maybe not to their house, but to the facility. You're doing the thing that is for the commercial space in general. Like, this is kind of normal. I think that if they are anyone coming from the single family space, they, or including myself, I didn't realize how long it takes sometimes on these bigger transactions. So you're connecting with someone, and then you're connecting with them again, and you're doing a different type of follow-up. And you're not going to see a turnaround right away. And then when you're under contract, and that's what you're mentioning, that takes a little longer also. It's not something that you get under contract and you're closing in 2 weeks. This is something that you get under contract, and there's some due diligence on your part. Mm-hmm. So what is one of the things that would be, and let's dive into that. What's the due diligence aspect to go, you know what, these are the first two, three things that I look at any park. I could do it from Google Maps. I could do it from my computer. What is one of the aspects that you would do in like your underwriting?
So right now what I'm looking for facilities, so my location is, again, 2-3 hours from where I live or I have facilities. And then I look at the size. So my size right now is probably 30, 40,000 net rentable square feet with some room to expand. So I need to have where I can bring value. And mom pop that actively manage the, or maybe even have third party management or employees, because that's where we can come in and be more efficient. You want to get there, how much gross rents are they collecting? And then you want to help verify that later on by their bank accounts or tax returns. But you can also go and look at the facilities and look to see if it's actually occupied. Because if you see a lot of red or yellow locks on there, that either means, or what they call a little wire tags on there, like a safety seal. You see a lot of those. One, they're empty, or two, they're overlocked and people are not paying, or they're company units. So you want to go ahead and count the locks when you see. If you see all the disc locks and they're all the shiny silver, and pretty much all of them have that, then you, I mean, not 100%, but you can assume that a lot of those are filled by customers.
Got it.
So you kind of just have to do a checks and balances, because what is gross income? But then, even if they're not running it correctly, then you can say, well, what could the gross income be?
Then got it.
Pick the rates and the competition. See what the other competition are charging, to see if these people that you're talking to are in line. Also, see how full the competition is. Are they full or are they all empty too?
Right.
And you'd be like, well, if these are the three can't fill their facilities, then what's going to make me special to fill this one? So look at the competition, and then the due diligence, of course. You know, if it needs like a phase one, you know, and the bank will help you. If you're using a bank, they'll help you tell you what you need. Or, if, you know, feasibility studies, I think, are more for ground ups.
Got it.
Really dig in and verify, because I mean, a lot of these owners, they commingle stuff. So a lot of that income is not from storage, or a lot of those expenses are not from storage. Just really look at that information and keep on asking. And you know, if they don't want to give it, then at a certain point you say, well, if you really want to sell it, I need to know.
Because
eventually either the bank's going to got to know, or, I mean, we got to see what's under the cover.
Got it. One of the things that you're mentioning about is like the due diligence and the feasibility. And so what is something that that's just a red flag, you know, and you were mentioning about the locks and stuff. What is something that's a red flag over, like, is it like flood zones or?
Flood zone. I was about to say, I don't buy in flood zone. I know other people have, but I just don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
One, if it floods, then you got a big headache that you deal with these customers. And it's just, then you're thinking, well, the resale, can you resale it?
Right.
You know, I stay away from flood zones. I mean, if part of it's in there, that might be okay, but I know they kind of joke around sometimes when some of it's boat and RV and some of it's in flood zone, and you say, well, it's a boat, it's just gonna float.
It's doing great.
Yeah, flood zone's one. You gotta look at pipelines if you're looking to expand, to see if you're gonna be able to put buildings there.
Got it.
If there's expansion room, you gotta see about the city and their restrictions and codes, and some of them are a little more strict than others and want you to do this and that, and sometimes it gets too expensive. And then just access, and also maybe just ask the neighbors around to see, you know, what they thought of that storage facility. You know, they can say, well, oh yeah, that thing's been there for years. It's you know, people have stayed there a long time. I think it's a good piece of property. Or no, man, that guy, he used to dump a lot of stuff in the back. And if you look in the backyard or in the back of his facilities, there's probably some messed up stuff back there.
Right.
So the neighbors are always good.
Right.
And even looking at Google Earth and looking back at the years, because you can scroll back on different years.
Got it.
And have the aerial views. And what if you see half of his lot is covered in cars for like last 10 years and the last 2 years it's not. And you're like, well, is there a lot of contamination over there?
Right. So when it comes to that, and you have empty space in your property, and that's when you're looking at value add, is that something that you're looking at going, okay, I can throw in some extra pads in there? Or is that something going, I'll just do this for RV and boat? Is that the stuff that you look at way before you purchase it, obviously, but what is the thing what is the market doing right now that you're getting a better return, or that, you know, the market's going, this is just a wiser move as far as facilities go?
Well, yeah, it's always nice to see if you can expand. One, you want to be more efficient with your expenses and if you can raise the rates. But also to expand, and I think RV and boat per square foot is not, you don't get as much as you do for the storage facility units.
Got it.
But then you got to weigh the cost. And there's, for instance, we used the facility in Tyler. They used some RV and storage, RV and boat in the back.
Got it.
But it was a piece of land that kind of got like swampy, so they could only store like, let's say, six RVs back there. Otherwise, it gets too muddy and they get stuck.
Got it.
And there was a pipeline underneath it. So now you know you can't build buildings, but the RVs are not bringing the money in.
Right.
So, and it's quite a bit of land. So what I did, or we did, was we got some stabilized ground in, and then we put portable units over there that are, they look like, you know, very customized containers that look like storage units. Sometimes you can't even tell if you look at it close enough that they're portable units that can be picked up and moved. So we got those. I think we got like 5,000-6,000 square feet of those. And what they are the box wall units, and they come 8x20, so 8 feet by 20, and we put them in, so we could get 2 8x10s in one box, and they come flat packed in a container, and they are just kind of like you unfold them and you put them together, and it has same rolling doors just like.
And they have a crew, or you have to get your own crew to do something like that? Or
no, they will supply the crew. They fly in and they'll put it
in. Awesome.
And so we have some of those, and then some are just 8x20 boxes where we turn them long ways where it's deep and has one door. So you can kind of play with the configurations. But that way, so now our return on that piece of property is a lot better than 6 RVs. Now I got...
Right.
6,000, almost 6,000 square feet of rentable space.
Wow.
So that's one play. And then also a good thing about the portables is you can phase them in. It's I think minimum 12 at a time. So
okay.
You don't have to put up you can, you know, rent those up and then go get another 12.
That's awesome.
And you don't have to go get a big bank loan to, you know, put foundations in and put
do the whole thing, and it's vacant and they're not cash flowing yet and you're not doing anything. No. Yeah. So that can become an issue. And that's a good thing that you highlighted, because I think there's this part where you in the deal takeover, we'll call it that, you know, right. When you're taking onto the property and you're creating value on the property, because that's exactly your model, is that you're taking over an asset, taking over a storage facility. And what you want to do is, looking for the value, find the value, and then go, I could go create that, right? So now your NOI goes up, the value of the property goes up. However, just like if you were to do like a multifamily or a storage facility, It takes time to build these things out too. If you're going to be building up, you know, throwing more concrete pads down, doing this other stuff for foundation, getting all that set up, permitting required, that's needed. I'm guessing that there's permitting for drainage and other stuff that's going to be needed. And so what you're saying is this is a easier way or a more simple way to keep the cash flow going, still add value to your asset, still get the income from the asset. And at the same time, you're doing it in a wiser, timely manner, right? So it's just like adding on to your house an extra room. Like you do it as you move into the house. Okay, cool. Right. Sure. Or you add on to a multifamily property and you're going, I'll just build another building after these first three are fixed up and they're done and they're rented out. We'll work on building 4. So that's really similar to what you're talking about, right?
Yes. So we haven't done any ground up yet. One in Magnolia, we are looking to expand. So that would be the first one. But the same way, we're not going to just build, you know, 5 buildings all at once and hope they fill up. We'll build 2 at first and then fill those up. But have all the underground and everything else ready, but then build, you know, the last 2 or 3 buildings after that, as the first one fills up.
Right. Yeah. It's just like a neighborhood. I mean, if you go into a new build neighborhood, they have phases in a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the same thing as storage facilities. What is something that you can see that, maybe there's like a shift in the market or there's a shift in what's going on in the current day of like how storage facilities work? Is it just there's more technology involved, there's less hands-on, or there's more cameras everywhere? What is something that's been changing over the last 4 years that you've been involved?
So I think a lot of more facilities, including the ones I have, they are remotely managed, where they don't have, you know, a couple that lives on site that's in the office from 9 to 5. I don't think that's needed anymore. With technology, because you got cameras and you got technology that can operate the gates and so forth, and websites, people can sign up online over the phone, And also during COVID, people didn't really want people around.
Right.
Where they could just rent the facility, don't even really have to talk to a human being, but if they want to, they could, but they don't have to be in their presence. So that was really good during COVID.
Right.
But even during COVID, a lot of businesses, you know, had a hard time. Storage kept pretty strong. So technology is huge. Even the bigger guys, Extra Space, Public Storage, Life Storage, they are starting to do a little bit more of that remote, where they're not having a full-time employee in the office all the time. So I think that's probably one thing I've seen in the last few years. Today, being the market, the economy is a little bit still slower just because of the interest rates. And, you know, a lot of deals are not making sense. And some of the sellers are still, you know, thinking it's 2 years ago where they could get top dollar. But I think it will, you know, eventually turn back around.
Got it. So we have gone through the underwriting. We've gone through how we're finding these things. We've gone through, you know, technology stuff that's happening, and then like these extra areas of creating value, which I think is really the play, right? The play is you can buy these things and dump cash into it on a 3-story storage facility, but really it's already operating probably at its max, unless it's just mismanaged, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now you're looking at places that you need to create value. Sometimes they're out, like you've found some stuff that's over in Tyler, Texas. You were in Houston at one point, right? So that's a trip. How time consuming is it to get it off the ground? And typically,
I don't think it's. I mean, it's not terribly time consuming, but I mean, it takes time. I mean, I'm in the business every day and watching it. I think there's a lot of misconceptions where you can just buy a storage facility and just set it, forget it, and that might be partially true in some cases, but if you want that thing to run efficiently, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you want to provide customer service and you want to make sure the facility is safe and it's sound and nothing's broken into or not a lot of trash. Right. So I'm in it every day, always keeping an eye on what's going on. Now, am I at the facility all day long talking to customers, cleaning stuff out? No. So in that sense, you can do a lot remotely without being present at the facility all the time. As long as you have good people that you can count on, and then also good vendors. If you know things break, air conditioner breaks, you need somebody to come quickly. So I think it all depends on how much you want to be involved. And I think the more you're involved, the better things run. And if there's renovation going on, or you have to round up, because you're dealing.
Yeah, you're definitely more present whenever you have guys out there, you know, fixing things, breaking things. Things change, you know, as you go.
So I guess the main thing to point out is it's not, you know, he's storage facility, you got passive income coming in. No, there's work to be done.
There's work to be done.
Marketing. You got eyes on it.
Let's go into that. So what kind of work, can someone expect? Let's say they have, you know, 100 grand, 200 grand. Let's say I go look at a facility that I'm looking at, and I want to raise some money, and either someone's choosing to either JV with me on a facility or just say, hey, you know, I'd rather be an LP. I'd rather just get that passive, because LP would be more passive, which is the, mm-hmm. which more of the silent partner, basically the lending partner, for those who don't know. So what kind of day-to-day work could someone expect? So you got the marketing, right? You got to make sure that thing's filled up. The neighborhood knows about it. Everyone else knows. You have the leasing up of the facilities, right, of the boxes. Mm-hmm. And then making sure the grounds are clean, making sure that it's in good shape, anything that's broken. And then you have the exit. You know, someone leaves the property or stopped making payment. How much other things are happening throughout the day? Because it seems like it's not really time consuming, but you know, if I were to call on a storage facility, I would want to call back fairly quickly. Otherwise, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. So whether you're doing the phones or you have help doing the phones, the phones are important because you know they're usually calling because they need it. pretty much now, or you know, some people plan ahead, but mostly mm-hmm. they need it like within this day or next few days. So you really want to answer that phone or get back quickly if you can. So the phones are important. Usually once you do, you know, when you first buy the facility, you do whatever renovations you need that are, you know, really primary ones. Then after that, there's not much things to really break. The gates will go down if you have gates, sometimes electronics or the power will go out. So you gotta have somebody on standby to reset that, or if you need a gate company to reset or install another motherboard. The AC breaks or needs service. But if you have non-climate, then there's not really much things to really break or clean out. If everybody does a good job.
Is the move in storage moving more towards climate control? Is that what you're seeing a lot more in the industry, where climate control is not too much different? As far as like, is that what the move is more towards as far as new builds?
I think so, because people, depending where you are, especially in Texas, you need climate control. Otherwise, right. It's too hot. I mean, 110 degrees outside, imagine in a hot box.
Yeah.
What your stuff is doing. So you also got to be careful what people store in there. I mean, you try to tell people, okay, you're getting non-climate. What are you storing? Because you don't want to store anything that's kind of delicate.
Got it.
But yeah, I think, and you get, you know, some more per square foot per dollar for climate. But then in another sense, people just like the non-climate because you can drive right up to it.
Right.
And with the climate control, you can't drive right up to it.
Right.
Empty out like your garage. So there's a good mix, but I mean, climate control is, a lot of people do favor those. But I think a good mix is good.
What is a perk, or what is something that you would say a good facility, if you were to just to end my sentence in your mind, would you say every good facility always has what? Good management? Good. Well, like what is something that every good facility that you've seen? Good road frontage? What is?
Well, first, good customer service, because you'll be surprised. I've called other facilities to kind of see where they're at and what their prices are. So some of them don't even call you back. And I don't tell them I'm, you know, I own the one on the street, but just act right. like a customer. They don't call you back. I mean, it's just the little things. It's just right. answering the phones, calling back, being, you know, just being a reasonable human being with, you know, another person. Because I think what we have an advantage also is, since we're like a smaller operator, not a big corporation where we have rigid rules, we can, you know, make the deal happen, where if this doesn't line up perfectly, it's a no. And you know, life happens and people are people, and
right.
it's treating the customers like customers, because usually, you know, things can be worked out. So good customer service and good location and a good facility.
Got it.
Upkept.
And then what about road frontage? It's okay for it to be off the beaten path sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, road frontage is always nice. It's, I mean, marketing. The better you can be seen, the easier accessible. It's always good. But let's say you don't have that, but then you at least want to have, let's say you have one facility that's on road frontage, but you can also have another facility that doesn't have any road frontage, but at least once they come into that first facility, you can point them more down the road.
Got it. That makes sense.
But at least the front store has a lot of the marketing frontage. Yeah, it's got to be easy to find. A lot of people find you on Google. You're searching storages near me. So you got to be on Google, but you got to be also easy to get to. So all the ones I have pretty good frontage. And if they're not, they're pretty much one or two streets right off.
Right. Yeah, there's a sign or whatnot that's close by that you can, that's pointing in that direction. So yeah.
You can't be totally hidden.
Right. So, okay. So that's awesome. All right. Well, I mean, man, this is good because this is good for anyone who's listening who wants to get involved with storage. Hearing your story of going, hey, look, I came from here. I did this. I did this. I did all these things. And then just really ending in the fact that hindsight, after all the years you've been involved, I've known you for quite a few years, and come back and go, you know, after doing it, I didn't really need to start in single family. I could have started here just a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact of you saying, which is really interesting, of saying, I wanted to get involved in commercial real estate. So I took the capital that I got from the single family and just the profits, and I started just putting it in different places that wasn't just single family, and lending it out. Maybe it was 50K, maybe it was 100K, but it wasn't like, you know, you're jumping millions of dollars. And I think that's what there's a misunderstanding. Like, if you name anyone who is doing in your position or my position of just acquiring assets, someone that says, hey, look, I got 50 or I got 100K that I could just put to work. I don't really care to see it. I just want it to be producing income for me. And I want to do it in a real estate asset. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to say, yes, like I got some stuff that I could put your capital towards right now. And so that's one of the things that I really liked about how you got started in a unique way of just being a lender, you know, and it wasn't, I don't think that it was a lender on $1 million basis. It was just small chunks, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And then I could spread it out to three different asset classes and three different operators. So you can right. kind of see everybody operates a little bit differently.
Right.
And then also the asset class. And then you get to see a little bit behind the scenes what's going on. I mean, you get quarterly reports and so forth. So you get a good little bit of understanding of what's happening, but it's still a lot to learn when you go ahead and be the GP or
right.
take one on your own. But at least it gives you one step further than you were before, just doing single family.
So that's really a good win for those who want to get involved with storage facilities, is just going, hey, be a LP on some of these things, or just get involved somehow, or be a deal finder for someone, right? Or be willing to be the boots on the ground, which is going to be a lot of sweat equity. But, you know, the idea is, if you want to get into it, and that's really my takeaway, is like, you don't have to go through the route of like one step, two step, three step. I've heard so many people, I bought four houses, I bought eight houses, I bought 10 houses, and I sold those and I rolled them into this. And that does work. It's a great plan. But one of the things you highlighted that I liked was you saying, I found the one that worked for me, right? And you're like, this one really worked with my personality the most. Mm-hmm. And I know you well enough to where it's actually a pretty good lifestyle, where you're not always having to travel and always having to look at the facilities all the time. You can work remotely. You know, I've been with you in different places, and I'll vouch the fact that, you know, you're working during the day, but it's not all day long. It's not a straight 8-hour day. You're working as you're taking some of the calls, and then we're going doing some of the other things offsite. We're not even around any of the facilities, you know? And so those are some of the perks that I see. Just from being around you and being around others in the storage facility. I don't have any myself, but I am looking at acquiring more. So that's why I am talking to you and talking with others and really helping other people see just the value of it to add to your portfolio if it fits, right? If it's something that you want to get involved with.
Sure. And I think, I mean, just look at, I mean, I'm always on the look for, you know, deals, whether it be storage or land or whatever it may be, industrial warehouse. But if you really want to get into something, yeah, just find a way to be either the boots on the ground or the deal finder. You can find the deals. Everybody's looking for good deals. There's a lot of money out there looking for good deals. Even yeah. if you have to take a small part at the beginning, but maybe the next one you get a bigger part, or maybe the next one you get an even a bigger part. And then by right. time you partner up, and then just be careful of who you partner with, and you know, watch what's happening and read the documents.
Right.
But soon, your share will be a good amount, and probably later on, you'll be on the flip side. You'll be the right. one that's funding everything, and people are finding stuff for you. But I think be okay with just starting off small, if it's just a small piece of the pie, and then just growing that piece of the pie as things come along.
Yeah. little pieces at a time, guys. That's about it. Luke, I appreciate you doing this, man. This has been really fun. It's been good to hear your side and hearing your journey and how you've gone through the whole thing. I hope this is really inspiring because you've helped out a lot of people. If you guys go ahead and share, what is the clubhouse again? What's it called?
Okay, so it's Self-Storage Clubhouse. So if you go on Clubhouse and get the app, you'll have to fill out a bio and then just look for Self-Storage and then you'll find our group. Or if you can just follow me on there and you can find the group through that also. Tuesdays, 9 a.m. Central. Yeah, come join us. I mean, we have awesome. A lot of different vendors on and different professionals. So you learn all different aspects of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been on there plenty of times, guys. It's great content. Guys, if you need anything else, get a hold of us. Contact Mark, contact me. Please share this if you enjoy this. If you have other questions for Luke, you can contact him. We'll give you his contact information in the notes. And that's it, guys. We'll see you next time. See ya. Peace.
See ya. Thanks, man. Good seeing you.